What's going on, ecosystem? Welcome back to Industry Logistics. We have a great show for you today. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about the automotive impact from the Baltimore Bridge collapse. We have a great panel for you. So chime in, join the live chat, ask your questions. It's ATI Auto Business. Port of Baltimore is the ninth busiest port in the United States. Last year, the private and public terminals within the Port of Baltimore handled nearly 850,000 cars and light trucks. That's more than any other port inside the U.S. for the last 13 years. So we have a lot to talk about. Here's what we're going to do. First, we're going to bring in my co-host, Sue. Can you see me and hear me okay?
I can. Can you see and hear me?
I can now? See you. I can hear you now. Mic check, cool. 1, 2, 3. Good. What we're going to do is we're going to set aside other news for next week. I think we have Charles Lemons joining us next week, so that'll be great. Mm-hmm. This is a special installment. Now, I am going to talk a little bit about the show for a minute, though.
Okay.
This is Baltimore Bridge Automotive Impact. We have a big panel today, and everybody knows about what happened Tuesday, March 26th, in the early mornings. And there is a lot of impact. Obviously, there's going to be. As I look at the Port of Baltimore, and, you know, this is the deal. Here's the bridge. They've already taken it off Google Maps. The bridge is gone. You've got these loops back here in 95 and 895, but look at how convenient that was to have that bridge connecting Hawkins Point to Sparrows Point. And in fact, check out how big the ship was. And this is a small ship by comparisons of international cargo ships. Size of the Eiffel Tower, almost the size of the Empire State Building. The tonnage was
a lot.
A crazy number, yeah.
Wow, 850. No, that switched.
So I switched, yeah. And, well, and again, this is a 985-foot cargo ship, not nearly the biggest. So this could have been even worse.
Really bad.
Yeah. But we'll get into specifics. But I've been sharing news and talking about it and the speculation. Will it be minimal? I don't see how this is going to be minimal. I wouldn't even put that out there. But sure, maybe it depends on which company. I mean, it's OEMs and dealers. It's going to disrupt supply chain. We're also talking about a lot of freight. Yeah, this is going to slow down some for dealers, but dealers have an inventory right now where they're going to be okay for the short term. But what's the long-term impact? It's like 1 to 2 years maybe to rebuild this bridge. And then in the meantime, all the workers, the car haulers, the dock workers, the people that work in logistics. Derek Hopkins shared this.
Wow.
Yeah. So let's look at, here's before. So yeah, this will be a bit of twilight zone for a lot of people local.
Yeah, my guy that I take stuff to the port has already called me saying we got to go to Wilmington.
Right. So, yeah. Exactly. So let's see. Yeah. Approximately 4% of all shipments auto-related in those.
Wow.
I mean, that's a big, yeah.
40%.
And also talk about, you know, this is, again, automotive is always so much different than fate when you look at what's required to manage the cargo. You need to be able to roll on, roll off, somewhere to store the cars. You can't stack cars. You can stack containers.
Well, yeah.
So anyways, there's a lot of special considerations. And so that's really what today is going to be. We're going to be talking about is, and you just mentioned it, your driver talking about what we're going to need to do. And so we've got, there's going to be constant news coming out and information and changes and diversions and And so that's what today's panel is about. And I want to get to the panel. So I only ate up 5 minutes there. So let's do this. panel, I hope you're ready. Joe, Derek, Rod, and John, I think everybody's ready. Here we go. Please do help me welcome. We got four auto transport business owners that are experts in managing, booking, loading, handling the logistics of ports and working with OEMs, dealers, etc. Joe, I see you in here first. Joe, you want to say hello?
Hello.
Hey.
Long time no see, ATI.
Hell, what's going on?
Been busy. Busy's good.
All right, busy is good. Rod, how you doing?
Great. How about you guys? We're under tornado watch, but we're dry so far. So, so far, so good.
Really? What area are you in again?
Tampa.
Tampa.
Oh.
Oh, man.
Crazy.
There we go. I guess let's just get this thing going, right?
Out of our days here in this Sunshine State.
Fantastic. Let's see. I think Derek is joining. I think John is also joining. And it's the middle of the day. Things are busy, of course. Hey, Joe, you want to kick us off? What are we looking at? What are your opinions? What news are you reading? What statistics are you thinking about? Kick us off with this. Yes.
I would say, for starters, couldn't happen at a worse place in American infrastructure. For lots and lots of reasons. Port of Baltimore is a very, very massive port for automobiles and both in and out, import, export. And it also is a huge hub for intermodal and, you know, box container shipping, once again, import and export. It is 170 some odd acres of sheer madness. If you want the truth, it's a lot of volume, not just automobiles, but a lot of automobiles too, come in and out of that facility. And the reason why, is the classic, real estate conversation that you have: location, location, and location. It is right on line for two major railroads, the CSX and Norfolk Southern. So volume can get to and from there very easily by way of their spurs. It has easy access to I-95, I-81, I-70. So you can get to from Maine to Florida and straight shot to Ohio, you know, into the Midwest. So real easy access, you know, as long as you're willing to deal with Baltimore's traffic, the infrastructure, it all sort of converges right into that spot. Port of Baltimore services General Motors, Honda, Jaguar, Land Rover, Mitsubishi, Nissan, Toyota, Volvo, Mazda. I mean, just about everyone goes in or out of there. It's a very, very, very busy facility. A lot of movement, a lot of car hauling in and a lot of car hauling out. Probably most interesting statistic that I find, I heard this quite a while ago and I went looking for it to confirm it today, 2/3 of the population of the United States, 65%+, is within 500 miles of the Port of Baltimore, which is really impressive if you think about it. I mean, you know, there are some huge ports on the West Coast too, you know, Port of Los Angeles, Wamimi, and Oakland and whatnot. But 2/3 of the country's population within essentially one day's drive as far as the log goes, that's a lot of density. And so that's why Baltimore is as big as it is. And that's why this hurts so much. That's what I have at my fingertips here for comment.
Thank you, Joe. Hey, Derek, John, can you see us and hear us okay?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we see you, we hear you. Derek, you're first on my screen. Derek, please say hello.
Hello, everyone. I'm Derek from Fine Line Transportation.
Thanks, Derek. John, please say hello.
Hello, everybody. ATI. I'm here. And hello, everybody.
Now, everybody here obviously has a different perspective, different location. But in as far as work in the Northeast, show of hands, who has a lot of work up in the Northeast? Right. So, Derek, I shared your photo, your before and after. What's that? What's that like even today?
Well, that was taken by one of our drivers that runs daily out of Dundalk. So there's just so many things, like Joe was saying, that tie into the port. You know, not only autos, but you have to think of other things like tires for our trucks, everything else. And pretty much there's three or four automotive ports down there, and only one is accessible right now, as far as I know. And Dundalk's the biggest one, and that's not accessible by ship.
Which one are they using now? Is it Sparrows Point? Or?
Yeah, I think Sparrows Point, where the Volkswagens are, and I think BMWs are over there, or this is the only one you can get to by ship.
Yep. And a comment here, part of the reason why Baltimore has that degree of volume, a lot of it has to do with that it's a deep water port, and so it can accommodate specific classes of ships that that carry cars, and there are not that many of them that have sizable enough real estate to accommodate those larger ships.
I brought the map back up here. Yeah, so Sparrows Point. Yeah, what, for anyone that's not familiar, right, with Dundalk and Sparrows Point, who wants to talk about geography and location and accessibility?
Well, I can give you a little bit. I'm not an expert on it, but if you look to the right of the screen, you can see Sparrows Point before the bridge there. then you also have Curtis Bay, which would have been after the bridge to the left. Mm-hmm. And then you have Dundalk, which is further in, and that's the biggest auto port and port in general for containers and everything else. And like Joe said, the big thing is to be able to have the deepness of the water for the big ships to come in and out. So right now, I think they cleared a little channel for working, but they're saying by the end of April, you can get a 35-foot ship through, but it's going to be deep, but it's going to be the end of May, possibly, before, the auto ships and big container ships need 50-foot deep waters to navigate in and out.
And another comment, too, it's not just about the ships, but the processing centers. A lot of these vessels, they unload, and these are like blank cars. They're missing accessories, or there's prep that needs to be done before they're ready for distribution. And those VPCs are a tremendous amount of business and a tremendous number of jobs. And I guess a lot of people got a telephone call to stay home that morning because, that's a big deal.
Yeah, the articles and reports about just workers out of work or temporarily out of work is, I think it's in the thousands, just locally at the port. Maybe hundreds of dock workers, up into the thousands. But if you look at, this is where we talk ecosystem, the domino effect of all of the people affected, not just those that needed to cross the bridge. What's, by the way, side note, what's it going to be like now to go to Dundalk or try to, because you can still access it through 95 and 895, but they were saying 35,000 vehicles crossed this bridge every day. That's all vehicles. Do you still have, what work is there right now at the port, and what's it like traffic-wise, etc.?
As far as us, I mean, they're working through, like Joe says, we would get two types of product in with our contract in Dundalk. Some of them would be ready to go. They unload them off the ship. They take the tow hooks off. 48 hours, every car is ready to go. Other units we would get in from Japan would have to go through the processing center, floor mats, window stickers, other accessories. So right now they're still dribbling through a little bit of that. As far as access, I haven't heard too many of my drivers say that's big time traffic. It does affect people leaving Sparrows Point, going at either if they were going south or going west, because now they can't go come out of Sparrows Point and go south and boom, hit I-70 or hit 95 north. They got to go all the way back around. Also, 896 is out for trucks because you can't be, I think you can only be 96 inch wide to go in and out of there. So it'll help with car traffic. But as far as truck traffic, you can't go through that tunnel.
That's the problem there, is this is a series of bridges and tunnels, and they're not all rated for the same things. And so that becomes an issue.
And we're talking about work at the moment. I suppose we're assuming pretty soon we're going to reach a pinch point where there really isn't much work in that area. And the work will then be moved to the other ports, Brunswick,
Newark.
Who wants to? Yeah. Please tell me.
We've already had ships diverted into Newark, and I know other friends that have contracts down there had some of their work diverted to Newark. And the problem is there's only so much room in Newark as well. And you have to remember too, Baltimore Port was huge for farm equipment, big, huge pieces of equipment coming in and out, things that are high and heavy. So that stuff's going to go to Newark right away too. So not just containers, cars, whatever, but they immediately made plans later that morning to divert ships to other places. Fortunately for us, we're able to follow the work. It doesn't work out for all the drivers that were working down there, but we're still able to haul a lot of our contracted freight out of other ports in the Northeast.
Yeah, we're finding out. We're not doing anything out of there at all right now. We're just doing the other port work. But there's nothing. There's nothing coming out of there. So, we're just on a hold to wait to see where it ends up going. I just don't know if it's going to work out with the guys with the sleeper trucks versus the day cabs because of how long they're going to have to run to deliver the cars.
I think that's the biggest issue. That's the hour of service. It's adding like 1 to 2 hours a day to the routes. And there's only so many hours in the day that they can drive. And between, if it's that traffic, like they were mentioning earlier, you can't just go south now. Now you have to go north and around then come back down. So all that added in, it's taken another one third of the day just to finish the same route that we're usually used to. Luckily,
and fuel.
And fuel, correct, and everything else. And luckily, all our drivers are OTRs, but they still have to get home by the end of the week. It's not for families, but for our hobbies. It's difficult to still accommodate all that together between. And then the other thing is, it's like they were mentioning is the, yeah, we might have less freight going out, but we still have freight coming in from West Point, Montgomery, all the other plants and manufacturers sending their freight up to those areas. Now, what's our backhauls?
That's a great point, Rod. A lot of networks are set up on,
correct,
triangles and, and rectangles and things. And now you got one leg missing, then it puts you into a pricing problem.
And like you said, Joe, I mean, a lot of these ports, they got to be able to upfit these vehicles. So they got to be set up for that. Otherwise, they just can't take them to any port if they don't have the facilities to update them, upfit the vehicles. So I'm thinking that's probably, Georgia, from what I'm being told, it's one of the bigger ports that can handle that. So if they start dropping the stuff down south, that means it's going to have to come north.
That's true. What do we do? What happens then with these logistical issues and added expenses what now?
Well, let me add another layer to this. You know, when they launch a boat from wherever it's coming from, you know, much like our trucks, you know, they're operating under a bill of lading, and their origin and destination is declared and set, sort of like the FAA. So, except, you know, takes a week to get there. So you can't turn on a dime with these things. So once they start launching boats towards one destination or another, that's where they're going to go. And, you know, even if the port gets up and running, you know, allegedly by May or whatever they say it is, it's going to be some time after that before you start seeing things unload there in earnest, just because it's going to take that much time for the vessels to sort of readjust and realign to those routes that they were running too. So this impact is going to be longer than I think a lot of people think.
Well, another thing to add to this is we might have the space in those ports, but we might not have the manpower to facilitate
process.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Exactly. Because all those people were, you know, those jobs were in Baltimore, and now you just sent, you know, all that business down to Brunswick, you know. So very interesting points there. I mean, you know, if you don't have the right floor mats for Volkswagens in Brunswick and you don't have people to put the floor mats in, you know, using a kind of a silly example, but yeah, those are not small problems.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
I can only hope that they're going to bring everything to Newark so I can take it south. Snowbirds coming north.
But are you saying then that ships can't be, I don't know, say easily diverted to another port because the paperwork says it's going to Baltimore?
They're regulated just like we are, and probably like more so. Like, I remember that stuff's coming into customs, you know. Yeah, I don't know how many of you guys have ever driven through any customs checkpoints with cargo, but ain't nothing fast about customs.
You can't say to customs, listen, they said go down this way.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So that'll have to be a fix. At the government.
Imagine
level.
What customs is having to jump through right now.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
All those jobs were in Port Baltimore. And the federal, you know, federal customs said, stay home. Or here's your plane ticket, one.
Are there a bunch of boats already out in the water waiting then? I mean, does anybody have an eye on what that looks like?
I heard there were, but I don't know specifics. Maybe Derek does.
I mean, our ships that they come up, they stop in Brunswick, then they would stop in Baltimore, and then they would go to Newark. Sometimes they would go to Rhode Island, depending if they had cars from there. So they just kept on trucking up to Newark, New Jersey. And I don't know how the paperwork went with the cars or anything, but 5 days later, we were up. Or 4 days later, we were in Newark hauling our product out of there. other manufacturers I've heard were dumping their cars in Newark and shuttling them down to Dundalk because, you know, to get processed, like Joe says, a lot of the cars need to get processed. So that was their answer to that solution. So, I mean, I guess for that, manufacturer kept their people working in Baltimore, but the whole thing is the space. There's only so much space, you know, prime real estate, everything. It's not like you can just open up a storage yard in Newark, New Jersey. Everything's spoken for.
Yeah. Newark and the Port Authority, Port Jersey, Jersey City, Port Elizabeth, you know, these are relative speaking, especially to the Midwest. These are tiny, tiny facilities, postage stamps, you know, that are completely surrounded, totally landlocked. There is no more space to go to. There's no place to grow to. So the solution to the problem is just to ship it all as fast as you can, make space for the next vessel. Did you guys, anybody here see any requests to shuttle traffic out of the port up to other facilities for export?
We haven't heard anything, and we'll just wait to see when the brokers are going to start releasing that, because I got a funny feeling they're going to give it to the brokers, but we haven't even seen it yet. I don't think they've gotten to that point yet, unless you know something, Derek.
No, I haven't heard too much. I mean, we used to shuttle cars sometimes between Dundalk and Curtis Bay, or vice versa. Obviously, that's out the window now. It wasn't something we did every week, but from time to time. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of cars, new cars that get exported out of Dundalk every day too, you know, in Curtis Bay. I mean, I know Stellantis is one that used to ship a ton out of Curtis Bay, you know, out of the country, stuff from Toledo and everything else. So I haven't heard anything what they're doing. I know, I'm sure some of them maybe will turn to Rhode Island for that. Rhode Island doesn't seem like it's as jam-packed as Newark and Baltimore ever was. So if anywhere has space in the Northeast, it would be there or Wilmington, Delaware.
I was going to bring up Wilmington. I heard some chatter at Wilmington was potential alternative, but I have no idea if they have vessel space or berth space. I know that's a pretty big container port.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so alternative ports. Newark? Brunswick, which obviously is down the coast.
What's Wilmington, Delaware.
Wilmington, Delaware. So mm-hmm. Wilmington and Newark are the closest.
Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But the problem is, like in Philadelphia, for example, that is a deep water port, but the U.S. Navy uses that to store aircraft carriers and things like that. So I'm guessing that's not going to be available real estate.
Mm-hmm.
You said something about the brokers getting the... So let's talk about that. Chain of command. So all of a sudden, there's all these bottlenecks. Who gets told first? And, right, who? How does this go in order of how do we solve this logistics problem?
Nowadays, it's usually the cheapest.
Yeah.
Whoever's cheapest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to follow, but all right. So starting with who has all the orders that need to be diverted? Is it automakers? Is it port processing? Who has these orders?
It's usually 3PLs, you know, Glovis or T-Force or Rubicon or one of those kind of organizations. That's what their specialty is. Wilenius. You know, that's their specialty is to try and get all that data and, you know, put it into something crunchable.
Okay. So the 3PLs have the orders that need to be diverted. And they're working with...
Manufacturers will send out basically gigantic spot buy bids. And, you know, because they are the way they are, they all have different processes and... Some will do it in 500 unit chunks or whatever, you know, whatever amount. Some will say, you know, 3 month duration. So, you know, it's really just depends on the flavor that each manufacturer or each 3PL tends to prefer. And then it hits the marketplace and goes from there.
All right. So you got automakers and 3PLs working together to divert and divide up how things are going to get done.
Mm-hmm.
Those orders then go to auto transport businesses, some go to brokerages. What's that look like? I know it's hard to talk about, but let's talk about it.
You know, Jay, what this is, I'm going to say it this way, and the carriers here are all going to laugh at me. But I guarantee you that it's going to be some college intern that pulls out a spreadsheet and tells us how the shit is going to fly instead of someone who actually knows how trucks work.
Yeah,
and
true.
I'll leave it at that.
Well said.
Yep.
That's awesome. All right. Well, good. So everything is normal then. Perfect.
And we don't even know. We don't even know if the rail's going to get involved in it.
Awesome point. Okay. So let's talk about it. So you've got alternative methods, different ports, truck it, rail. Are there rail options here? I mean, there must be, right?
Yeah.
Theoretically?
I bet there are. Now, they may have to be shuttled from the port to the railroad, you know.
Yeah.
That might have to happen. That just depends on what. That's why Baltimore was so attractive, is because it's a convergence of so many things. There's only a few places in the country that have that. And, you know, get having access to all of those resources, all of those railroads, and all that capacity at on the East Coast, that Baltimore was probably the best. That's why it was the biggest auto inbound and outbound port, was because of it had those accesses.
So, and I think once there are some that say, and it will be again as soon as possible, which could be a year or two. So this isn't like a short-term problem.
Well, even if they reopen the port, remember, the bridge is not getting built in 3 months. So, you know, you're still going to be dealing with off-route traffic and, you know, additional congestion and all of that kind of stuff. What did you say, 14,000 cars a year go across that bridge? Well, now they're all going to go through Baltimore, you know, whether you know, through downtown or one of the other beltways, taking the long way around. So, you know, it's not just going to be, you know, where does the freight go in the short term? It's going to be whenever they start reopening that port and start dropping things. The amount of capacity required to do that job once upon a time, and the amount of capacity that's going to be required with a major southbound artery severed, is going to be two different things. So, and that's anybody's guess what that looks like.
All right. And so somebody with a spreadsheet could say, we're going to have the channel cleared in the next 60 to 90 days. So you only have a problem for 90 days. But that's
on the
not
spreadsheet you do.
On a spreadsheet, right.
On planet Earth near Baltimore.
No. So we
will go longer.
So even
much
if you
longer.
Right. Okay. Talk about that more. Let's say, because I want, what would you say to the guy with the spreadsheet? What do they need to know?
The shortest distance between two points for many of the points to the south have been severed. You know, so now it's, you know, you're going to have to go not just the longer way in terms of mileage, but also traffic, because you're not the only, that truck is not the only thing that has to take that different route. Now you and 14,000 other people a day are all going to go, you know, across 70 to come down instead of, you know, coming around 696 like they did. So, you know, if it was a 3 hour cycle time to perform a particular task, now it might be five. And to Rod's point before, you only have so much time to really operate before the DOT is on your heels. So, you know, there's more to the story than simply, you know, reopening the port so that they can start filling it with cars. And then you're going to have to, then you're back to the game of moving them in a timely fashion.
That's interesting. So it's not that we're 2 years away from America's most convenient, busy auto logistics port. We are 90, 120, 180 days from what will then become
new set of problems.
The most congested, busiest
mm-hmm.
port. So ships can still come. And that, I mean, that'll at least alleviate. Yeah, I was looking at like figures.
It's like 850,000 cars that came out of that port last year. So they're going to have to move those cars somewhere else.
That's a lot.
The only one that I know of that's not having a problem is Volkswagen and BMW.
I was reading that. Of all the automakers, you got Audi, Bentley, Ford, GM, Jaguar, Land Rover, Mazda, Mercedes, Nissan, Subaru, Toyota, Volvo. You also mentioned Stellantis. Yeah, only what are the two? VW and BMW are less affected because their terminals are located east of the bridge.
About But the trucks still have a problem getting in and out of there. So they can drop their cars and do everything there. But the problem is the trucks are still having a problem going in and out of Baltimore.
You know, dealers are saying, well, we still have a pretty good supply. You think the dealers will feel the hit in 60 days?
I don't know about that. I don't think they're selling cars.
Depends on interest rates.
So that might be, maybe that's good then. Right? Okay, good. Sales are low.
No. Jay, it's never good for car sales to go down for this panel.
No.
All right, so let's set the bridge aside for a second. How are car sales affecting the automotive industry right now?
My opinion is too early to tell.
Okay.
Feel it for another quarter, probably.
Okay, this Agreed. Isn't... So, how long have car sales been down?
2 years.
At least.
So, you're not... 2 years later, not feeling it? Maybe another quarter.
No, I think it's not just about raw numbers, Jay. It's what's selling and what isn't. You know, what we had several EV launches that were notable here in the last 12 months. We've seen some new products entering and exiting the market as manufacturers have closed plants and reopened them and retooled them and so on and so forth. Last year we had a significant domestic disruption because of the labor agreements that were put together and what happened there. So there's a lot that goes into the calculus.
I'm glad you brought that up. EV. So the question is here, is EV a main concern in auto transport logistics today?
Kind of.
All right, tell me more. Yeah. I mean, do you think about EV every day or once a week or what?
I don't think it's popular as it used to be. I mean, I think it's definitely dying off, but it's definitely there. We're still facing the issue with the weight. We're still facing the issues with the damages to the undercarriage. It's not like something that's behind us.
Right.
Yeah. And a lot of the new models are coming out this spring. So, you know, we're kind of in a little in-between spot. So we'll see.
If demand is down slightly, then are you in such a squeeze with the EV weight, or is it kind of something manageable at the moment?
I think we adapted to it by now.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought too. And then
another thing is a lot of the manufacturers were under so much pressure to produce EVs and reliable EVs, and they dumped so much money into them. And they've been failing the past year, and they're trying to recoup money wherever they can. There's a lot of downward pressure on rates everywhere in the auto industry.
Oh, great.
It's difficult to pay the truckload for 9 VINs versus paying the same rate for 4 VINs, and you don't have the truckers empty. It's difficult to really quote him. And they're like, it's only 4. I'm like, yeah, it is 4, but still, we are 80,000 pounds. So that's the issues that's always been on the table with us.
Well, I saw somebody was talking about how moving vehicles, whether it's a full load or partial load, it's not a big deal. Doesn't a truck need to be full to run?
Well, it's volume versus price.
Correct.
We got to keep the price up on the truck.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if the price is double, then the truck can be half full.
Of course. Mm-hmm. We would all have it that way.
Right. But if the price isn't double and the truck is half full, are we good?
No.
Not at all.
So this leads to the comment, I think, it folds into the comment about how when you have to do more with, you know, to do the same amount of work, you need X plus drivers, X plus equipment. And then on top of that, you add the challenges of increased weight and things like that. By the way, EVs aren't the only thing that are getting heavier. There are a lot of combustion vehicles that have been getting heavier lately, too. So, you know, it's not just the one.
Some SUVs are over 7,000 pounds.
Yes, sir. I know exactly which one you're talking about, too.
Yep. And they look like the ones that weighs 5,000 pounds.
I have not heard that headline.
Uh-huh. They're wider, taller. It's like loading dualies almost, in a way, but they're just SUVs.
Wow. Got me sidetracked thinking there. So, driver shortage. That's the other thing. Drivers. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Well, we've had a tremendous amount of drivers call in the past 4 months looking for jobs.
I don't think there's a shortage.
Yeah, I don't think there's a shortage either.
Yeah, there's no driver shortage. Driver shortage, yay or nay?
Nay.
Nay.
No, there. I've been.
Yeah.
No. I've been able to. My phone's been ringing too. So
yeah.
It's so there's. So there's no driver. There's not really. There's going to be some driver shortage. The number's never zero, but people are available to work. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Are they experienced? I mean, right? Do I know this is tough, but
to some extent, yes.
Yes, there are experienced drivers available.
But yeah,
or related
for the most part.
I haven't seen that headline anywhere.
Yeah, you won't.
Driver shortage is this thing. It seems like it's never going to go away.
And there's new trucks available to purchase too. So there's no shortage in any of our resources in a way. Parts are available, tires, everything you think of. We're good on that from that perspective.
Everything but interest rates.
Yeah.
Amen.
But I think too, you know, one of the other interesting things too, a lot of these ports, you require a specific credentials, TWIC cards and stuff like that to be able to enter and exit. That's been a bigger obstacle in my experience than applicants.
Yeah.
Great. Let's talk about TWIC for a second. So are people do more drivers, professionals need to get a TWIC card? What's going on with the TWIC?
You're going to do port work, you got to have a TWIC card.
So are there folks not getting their TWIC card or can't get their TWIC card?
It's can't. Yeah. Certain criteria with the background check and all that.
It's the background check. Yeah, we background check our way out of business all the time, don't we? You won't see that headline anywhere.
And we've had a couple of people that applied
into Georgia, out of Oklahoma City.
Sue, were you working again?
Yes, sorry.
Oh, okay. John, take it away. What was up, John?
I thought you were trying to say something to me. No, we've had a couple of people that applied for it, but the problem was we couldn't hire them because they didn't have a TWIC card because we're in and out of the ports all the time. And they probably were good drivers. We just can't, you know. Whatever they did in the past, they just can't get a TWIC card.
Oh, we throw away good people all the time. Hey, what about the under 21 group? I saw a statistic that like a third of the under 21 that they were either trying to get, couldn't, wouldn't, didn't want to.
My insurance company won't even let me look at it.
The insurance company. Wow.
To be honest, like in the car hauling industry, like you got to have other prior experience in driving a truck before you can understand how you operate a Stinger, because it's in a drive-in world, you can go on behind Walmart and park, no big deal. Trees, who cares?
Yeah.
But when you come down to car carriers, you gotta understand you only got 2 or 3 inches of clearance, top, left, right, and bottom.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to learn in such a short time. So we can't really train the drivers on how to drive the trucks, plus how to load them. It'd be too much to learn in such a short time.
But they also won't, a lot of insurance companies won't make an exception. Like, I know a lot of second generation kids, grew up in car hauling. You know, John's kids grew up in car hauling. You know, my kids did as well. John's kids has made the transition, but like that was a different time period. That was, 15, 20 years ago. Now, we just renewed our insurance. My son got a CDL at 18 and we have to like write a letter. You know, my son has a CDL. He has this Pennsylvania truck inspection license, all these things. We have to write a letter and it has to go in front of a underwriter for him to be able to drive one of my trucks part-time, like even bringing it from, the dealer to my yard. I think there should be an exception for some things where they just want to paint a broad brush and say, no, like I have other applicants that are like around the 23-year-old age. They've been driving a Stinger for 2 years, maybe for another company where the insurance wasn't so tight or they didn't tell the insurance company. Like, and these are kids that are hungry, eager to learn, eager to work. And, they want to back you in a corner and say, no, you can't hire them. I mean, you know, listen, you can't go out of state until you're 21 anyway. But that's another crazy rule, because you have a small state like Rhode Island compared to a big state like Florida or Pennsylvania. I mean, that's a little ridiculous rule too. But, you know, that's the thing. They say driver shortage, this, that. How many people turn, start in a profession and then they're entrenched in another profession by the time they're 23 and they can work over the road being a truck driver or driving a truck locally or whatever? I mean, that's not helping, you know, the future of driving at all.
And they probably have a better experience than the newbies that just been hauling freight for 10 years, was the first time touching a stinger. They're better off. You're with somebody who's eager to learn and young than some inexperienced people. But right. Insurance will approve sometimes.
Especially somebody who's growing up around the business, like Derek says. I mean,
right.
It's, you know, you got to start somewhere, even if you have them in the yard loading and unloading trucks or something. You got to teach them somewhere. And what we found out, what I have found out all the years I've been in it, normally 90% of the guys that we hire have worked for a tow company or something before, or they've done a wedge or something like that, and then they move up. But without that experience, the insurance company doesn't even want to look at them. You know, it's amazing. You know, they got to have 2 years experience, and they got to be over 22 years old. It's crazy.
The insurance companies are making those decisions based on something. What is it?
Statistics.
Yep. I was just like,
the underwriters. These underwriters have acres of statistics that they, you know, they said this, they assess risk against this matrix, and that's one of those key things right there. I mean, look, you could hire people that are younger. You could absolutely do that, but it'll affect your premiums down the line. So if you want to remain competitive, it's a decision you make.
Well, you said the phones are ringing anyways. What about the local work? I wanted to talk about drive away, since we're talking about the bottlenecks and new work. Have drive away services or demand, has that gone up? Or is this, when you say shuttling, is that short car haul? What does it look like?
Well, they're not going to drive away new cars, because who wants to buy a new car with 200 miles on it and pay MSRP, you know, like Joe said, shuttling, like, you know, bringing it from the port to a rail facility or from a port down to Dundalk to be processed would be what they do. The only time you really see drive away is, you know, rental cars, auction cars, things like that, that already have miles on them.
So go ahead, Ron.
With the new cars, they're in transport mode. You can't even exceed certain speed limits, and most of the functions are not available for you to drive safely on a highway.
Can independent owner operators show up and get in line and just get stuff to put on their trucks to move, or is there more of a formal system?
No, I think it's more formal. It's what we talked about before with the 3PLs and the bidding process and cycle and, you know, all that stuff.
Do you think go ahead, Joe.
This kind of volume, you can't just you know, gun it and pray. There's a lot of planning that has to go into this kind of thing.
Right, you gotta be an improved carrier with them, because they're just not going to have anybody to move their cars, hopefully.
But we don't know who some of the major arms of diversion are then brokering.
We don't know yet. We're going to find out. We don't know yet.
Okay. But you, Derek, you said within 4 days you were already going to Newark, probably with your clients or contacts, or... like, you got pretty quick word, hey, run up to Newark?
Yeah, they did a vessel diversion into Newark. I mean, it was due to be in Baltimore 2 days after, or a day or two after, the bridge collapsed. So, but I mean, that's a challenge in itself, too, because, like, you have let's say Maryland, okay, out of Baltimore, like I have a driver that'll do 3-4 loads a day. So you go from New Jersey to Maryland, that's one load a day. You know, you also have drivers that are used to being home every night. Now, if they have to go to Newark, I mean, it's not that far, but you can't make the, you know, the turn under hours of service. So like you need more trucks to do the same amount of work than you did before.
Plus there's tolls and things like that too.
More tolls. Yep.
So
and some drivers are a creature of habit, like, and you take them out of that and like, you know, then they're flustered. They're not thinking right. Like they have their routine or whatever. And it just, you know, throws them haywire.
That's a good point. We're looking at this like it can all be solved with math, but that's not, there's the human element.
Like Joe said, it's not just a sheet. It's more than a sheet.
There's so many things that can go wrong with the traffic and everything here. You know, the Northeast is just awful when it comes to traffic. It's so hard to predict when you're going to be where you got to be, you know. If the conditions are right, you can do it. If they're not, forget it. These guys are sitting in traffic. They're not getting anywhere. It's pretty tough up here in the Northeast.
What would a driver say? A driver sitting in traffic right now, already diverted, thinking, man, I can't do this for 3 more months. This is making me crazy.
Jay, they have too much time to think. You wouldn't believe the stuff that comes out of their mouths. They have too much time to think. You know, they're not happy. If they're sitting in traffic, they're not happy.
Right. Well, it sounds like it's tough.
The companies used to be able to eavesdrop on some of that stuff when they were all on CB radio, but now with cell phones and headsets, it's a lot harder to know what they're thinking.
What are some of the unpredictable? Let's brainstorm worst case scenario. What are some of the worst things that can happen based on? Like if you're an insurance company and you're like, man, what's the worst thing that could happen?
Bridge collapses into the bay.
Okay. Check. Okay. That happened. But what if another bridge went out or another, I mean, we don't need to go crazy, yeah. But what are some potential things that could make this even worse?
Infrastructure failure of any kind, you know, another bridge, having to take traffic lanes out of service because, you know, they weren't designed to handle the amount of volume or they weren't prepared to handle the amount of truck volume. You know, we are 80,000 pounds, so we punish the highways.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is one of those components of that equation. And by the way, we're not the only thing running 80,000 pounds, but, you know, having all that extra traffic going across that infrastructure can be a big problem. Fuel, availability of fuel. That would be a real bad one.
Yeah,
we've seen that happen before, where when the pipelines have had issues in the, you know, the I forgot what the name of it. Well, the one down in Florida got all compromised and it screwed things up for forever. So infrastructure would be the thing that I would say that would keep me up at night if I was an insurance adjuster.
Fuel, good point too. That's a good one. So. Do you think then there will be an intervention in hours of service?
There was some talk about that, wasn't there? Derek, you'd know probably more than us, but because you do a lot of business there, I guess. But didn't they say they were going to have an exemption to hours of service if you were within a traffic lane that was supporting the cleanup efforts or whatever about out of Baltimore? And I don't even know if automobiles qualified for that.
Yeah, I think there was talk maybe for the container haulers because they diverted a lot of that traffic to Newport News. You know, a lot of people brought up, well, Newport News too. you know, that was closed like 6 months ago, the processing center. Nissan was the last one in there and they pulled out of there. And it's not just like, oh, open it back up. Like, you know, you said before, the supporting staff and everything else. So, you know, besides cars, you know, we mentioned earlier, Baltimore brought so many more things in and out of the country. I mean, you got to, like, not too long ago when we went through COVID, You know, remember you, I had a truck that was in Florida for 8 weeks for a sensor that was on national back order. You couldn't get, you know, tires were an issue. You know, there was just little things. I mean, look at people went crazy trying to get toilet paper. So, you know, this beyond the auto, you know, hauling the autos, there's all other things that tie into our trucks working every day. That's going to be affected by this as well.
Is our cost then? Our costs going to have to go up somewhere.
It's already gone up, Jay. Everything's gone up. Cost of trucks, cost of repairs. Everything has gone up, but what we're getting paid to transport these cars.
Cost of money has gone up.
Yep.
And continues to go up. It's, you know, almost irrespective of what happens to interest rates. It's that demand is, it's a real thing.
So it's going to keep going up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
I think the biggest problem we'll be probably facing is that diversion of our trucks, like the one, because we're taking a major leg out of the equation. Whether we start in Baltimore or we backhaul from Baltimore, like now we're going to have areas, like if they moved it to Brunswick, now we drop in Baltimore or Virginia or wherever the case is, what's your backhaul from that point? You can't really deadhead 300-400 miles every single time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So serving those territories is going to be an issue too, and I'm sure that goes same to the containers and other companies besides just car hauling
products. Yeah.
One bridge.
Yep.
Wow.
Hey Jay, one of my good friends in this industry said right after it happened, he goes, we've been through so much in the last 3 or 4 years. You know, you say you got hit with everything but the kitchen sink. He goes, well, we got hit with the kitchen sink and now we got hit with the bridge too.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. I want to thank everybody. We reached the 1 hour mark and I don't want to keep you any longer. I know you're very busy. Taking time out of the middle of the day to talk about this, I really appreciate it. Joe Burkhard, Midwestern Car Carriers, Derek Hopkins, Fine Line Transportation, Rod Hamill, Hamill Auto Transport, John Larrick, Larrick's Towing and Transportation, Inc., and of course, my co-host, Sue, at Murphy Auto Transport Services. So, thank you so much. I'm curious if there's a need for a follow-up in 60 days or whatever.
That would
any
be cool.
Any predictions? I mean, yeah, cool. That would be cool. Any predictions as to what that looks like?
I think we're all going to know what's going on in a couple of months, and we'll be able to figure it out, you know, and see where the lanes are, what's going on. But I just don't see the port opening up in the near future of Baltimore.
I agree.
I think you're right, John.
A diversion and basically by mid-year to how the logistics will work.
We seem to, after a tragedy, we get on this fast track. Things move real quickly. It's kind of like at the change of the presidency, like that first week or two, man, pens are flying and things are happening. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly a month in, you get into the grind and the gears start to lock up. Think that's going to happen here? Right?
I don't know if they have a choice.
I don't know why those things happen. They just do. I guess that's logistics.
The thing is, I think we've seen a lot of up and down, a lot of apex and down in this industry. So it's almost like we're unbeatable at this point, I feel. I mean, the strike, COVID, everything you can think of, the rail shortage. I mean, God forbid if anything else to happen, but I think we're kind of used to it. There is no more plateau.
Well, that's why we all want, yeah, our gunnery sergeant to have scars and rips and tears. That looks like somebody who's been through a couple things.
I think we all want it to come back the way it was before COVID, you know? It's just
amen.
Yeah.
That's the goal, but it's and the interest rate, that's another thing. It's that's affecting the sales and the It's affecting the used, affecting the new, and it's like Joe said, it's things are selling better than others. It's not like just the new cars are not doing good. No, there's certain OEMs are have zero interest, certain have 5% interest, so yeah. It's difficult to tell.
All right.
It's a weird time, and I keep on finding myself saying how weird of a time it is over the last year. It's been a weird time for probably 3 years now.
Yeah.
It's a weird time.
Right.
Out of the 40 years I've been doing this, Jay, I've never seen it this bad. Never thought it was going to be like this. I went through two recessions, and they weren't this bad. It's weird what's happened to this business.
Okay, and we're talking about, to nail that down, are we talking about capacity, moves, demand? Is that what we're talking about?
Oh, yeah, it's all the above. It's never been
the above.
And I think another huge factor is the cost of parts for our trucks.
Mm-hmm.
It's outrageous what we're paying for tires and parts.
Yeah, or even finding them.
Yep. I just paid.
So that's still going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I paid $780 for one oil change yesterday. And I was like, why? Why is like almost $1,000? Well, yeah.
Wow.
Oh,
well, it's $100 on a car now. And it used to be, what, $15? So, yeah, it's crazy.
It was just a quick PM. We stopped at a good shop that we've been working with for years. And they said, just the cost of filters went up. I'm like, all right.
Wow. What did you used to pay?
Whoa.
Usually, between high fours.
That's what I thought. That's, 400
yeah. to 500. So
basically doubled.
Exactly. I'm like 760 or 780, somewhere on there.
That's crazy.
Everybody concur with that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's the most important part of the truck. You got to keep your maintenance itself,
Right. It's not like we can skip it or increase the interval. No, we still have, in order for the truck to be under warranty and make sure there's no breakdown, we have to keep up with all the intervals on time.
So, maintenance costs, logistics continues to go up.
Price
and
goes
demand
down.
And prices continues to go down.
Yep.
And so anybody saying that everything's fine is what?
Wrong.
Not observant.
Yeah. Everybody
back,
got into
the sheets.
Truck.
Where's Joe?
Everybody got into trucking after COVID. It was like the gold rush. Mm-hmm. Everyone went out and bought trucks. And, there's too many trucks out there now and not enough, freight cars, what have you. And I think a lot of people are starting to fall out because they can't just freelance anymore. I think that's why we've been getting so many calls for jobs the last 6 months, because people these guys were working for, just there's not excess work out there. Mm-hmm. So until the auto industry heals, interest rates come down, they start selling a lot of cars again, there's too many trucks and not enough cars to haul.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to keep rates down, even though trucks, tires, oil changes, everything is more expensive.
I saw an article from yesterday, 88,000 carriers, not just auto hauls, well, in general, on the I forget what website, it was a DOT something, 88,000 basically went out of business last year. And I've noticed a lot of used trucks in the market.
Hey, Edwin.
I think it's important that they understand, too, that the problem with the drivers is they always think the grass is going to be greener on the other side. But they don't understand what we're going through and how hard it is for us to keep our trucks loaded at this point, And some of the other companies that are out there are hiring these guys, thinking that there's going to be a lot of extra work for them, and there's really not.
Well, I keep seeing it seems like in the headlines, because we're learning a lot about headlines and where the real problems are. And I keep seeing folks that get asked about the state of auto transport. They don't have trucks.
Oh, yeah.
Am I wrong? What's going on here?
We see that a lot, actually. a lot of people like to talk about the industry and they have no idea what is it like to be an asset based carrier.
I'm not one to stand on, you know, well, you can't speak for, because I don't drive, I don't load and unload. So I mean, that's fine, but having equipment, it's got to change what you, John, what you just said. That's got to change the way you know the business, the way you see the business, and the problems you deal with. And in fact, but it, all types of businesses have a place in the ecosystem.
The thing is that when we do work, or like when I do work for Joe, or I do work for Joe, they all understand that when we have an issue, that it happens, okay? But the bigger brokers don't own any trucks. They have no idea what we're going through, you know? And when something breaks down, they don't want to hear it, you know? Mm-hmm. And we've always said that the most important thing is to build a good relationship with whoever you're doing work for, so that they know that you're going to be on time, you're going to get the work done. But at the same time, when you have, you know, you have an issue, that they know you're being sincere about it, that really is an issue, because some of these other guys, they don't see cars for weeks, they don't even know where they are, and you wonder why they're even doing work with them. If that makes sense.
Well, it does. And so what we'll do is, I think if you're watching on YouTube, you're still seeing it. If you're on LinkedIn, I think something happened to the stream. We went on too long. We got too controversial. What we'll do is this, because I know our hour is up. Let's look forward to another installment in June, early July, as a follow-up. Everybody like that idea?
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Yeah? All right. Awesome. All right, well then, make notes, keep me posted. I'd love to share progress updates on LinkedIn. So if you've got something, you know, that's important that you want me to put out there, I will do that. That's what we're here for. So I'm so thankful. Again, thank you all so much. Joe, Derek, John, Rod, thank you so much for taking this time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
All right, on. Thank you so much.
Joe, are we going to see you at the AHA meeting?
Right.
No, not this one. Not the spring. I'll be in the fall.
Okay, but
when is AHA? Plug it. AHA is when?
The 30th to the
30th. End of this month.
End of this month, yeah.
So, in Vegas. Does it start Monday the 29th?
Yep.
Yes.
And go to Wednesday the 1st?
Yes.
That's Auto Haulers Association of America spring meeting. And lots of members of Auto Haulers Association of America, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is the number one association in auto transport.
And it's growing.
Yeah, it's growing.
They're bringing on new members all the time.
Great. Shout out Guy Young.
You got it.
That's awesome. All right, cool. All right, cool. All right, we'll say hi to the members for us, and we'll see you in a couple months. Thanks again, everybody. Give you an applause.
Bye now. Thank you.
Thank you so much. My applause button. I went on so long, my applause button fell off the map. Well, all right, anyways. Oh, here we go. There we go. Thanks so much. All right. Okay. All right, bye. What I'll do is, Sue, I'll keep you for a minute, and that was really insightful. Let's go to the live chat. Cool. Thank you so much. Carol Morgan on LinkedIn loves this show. Thank you, Carol. JT says, good show, guys. Jala Jala, or Jaha Jaha, had a couple comments talking about the Army and Port Lots. 925 was here. Is here. Truckify says hello. Moosey, if you got an extra like, please do leave one. What I'm really proud of is that I'm going to say that this live stream today was unique. It was informative. What it was missing was OEM representatives and dealers, and I realize that, but you got to start somewhere. Getting the information straight from auto transport business owners. Everybody here has trucks, pays drivers, manages logistics. By the way, Sue, with what John was hitting on capacity, demand, etc., we talk about that with the load boards. Not that it's not the load board's problem. It's just that that's where we see it. By the way, you're still on courtesy mute. Is Jana still booking cars?
Yes, I am.
Good for you, Janice.
I don't know why it won't show me on my screen that it's on there. Right. So I
can see it. It's but, cool.
Oh, good. Okay. Anyways, yes. I mean, that's a regular thing we're dealing with, and I don't know how we make that change. I mean, we talk about this all the time. They don't. Their side doesn't get our side.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? Right. That's where it's at.
Then that's in their side. When we say that, their side, yes. We're talking about folks that don't have trucks but have deals with shippers.
Right. Yeah, you got dealers, you got shippers, right. Brokers. Yeah.
And I want to say that I saw, and by the way, I talked to everybody. Everybody's welcome. Camera one, everybody is welcome on ATI Auto Business. Dealers, shippers, brokers, carriers, drivers, DOT officers, everybody is welcome here. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're not really going to leave stuff out. We'll be nice. I'm not going to cuss unnecessarily. but we are going to speak the truth because I think as we can see in headlines and narrative and popularity contests, it's easy to leave the truth out. It always amazes me how people say they want the truth until the truth is in their backyard.
Yeah.
So, it's fine. I've come to realize I'm the M&M of automotive.
Okay.
Not really welcome. But still bringing pretty relevant stuff. So that's okay, you know? You got to know your place. Let's see. So the load boards don't have to fix our problems. They're dealing with the same problems, right? I'm sure the load board would prefer 40,000 loads posted every day, 40,000 loads moved every day. Right? That's good business.
Yeah. Well, yeah, then everybody be happy, yeah.
Yeah, but we are seeing it's just harder to get. What's it like when you're, hey, I saw, and we're going to share this next week. John, is John selling a trailer?
Yeah, he's selling his 3-car. He's got a 4-car, so he's selling his 3-car that he just fixed up.
Is he ramping down some of his operation, or?
No, he actually went up to a 4-car.
He upgraded.
So this is his old trailer.
Okay, this is his old trailer.
Yeah.
Is it harder right now for owner operators to stay loaded, make the money they were making before?
Yes.
Okay. How long has that been the situation?
Since, right at the end of the year of COVID, I would say. So let's say COVID hit what in 2020?
Yep.
So 21 was a between 2020 and 2021, after COVID was somewhat over, and we went back out on the road and made all kinds of crazy money all the way up until that year, right? Then didn't we get a storm at the end of that year? So we went back up to 75,000 loads again.
Right,
so
in like 2021, 2022?
21, 22. Okay. So we rode that out. I want to say 22 wasn't bad, but then it's been going downhill from
right.
there.
So
I would say anywhere from in 22 when everything slows down, which is what, September, August, you know, that time is when things started taking their normal dump, but never came back out of it. Because I know
2023 really was not great.
Right. No.
And now we're in 2024 and that hasn't changed.
No, not really.
So we're into, if you're an owner operator, and you're like that load sniper, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're just sniping great paying loads.
Yeah.
You're now a year into that hasn't been that great. And at that point, do you think some guys kind of like, I think we were talking about, some of those owner-operator freelancers are trying to get work with a company somehow to get more regular?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That or they're just getting out.
Or they're just getting
totally
out.
Different. Yeah.
All right. So now let's talk about the thing we didn't talk about. Fraud.
Right.
I said fraud tops EV and driver shortage.
Yes.
All right. And you agree with that. And then we saw Central Dispatch posted.
Yeah.
And
they have and you saw that thing. Did you go in and see where you go into it and it brings up a whole different page too?
So, no, I did not do that. Interesting. I just went here and I actually shared it on LinkedIn.
There's a different thing altogether. Let me see if I can get it to come up.
And I also, I want to say this. I didn't do this to call anybody out. I just did it because it reinforces what I think is actually the main problem.
Going on. Yeah. Yes.
All right. So, then you continue what you were saying. I mean, what are they saying? Where does that go? I'm not going to bring it up on the screen.
Basically, everybody just needs to watch it. If you noticed in that, I can't get into it the way I did this morning, unfortunately. It's mainly about watching your passwords because obviously people are hacking. I know Central doesn't think they're being hacked, but we all know something is taking place. Otherwise, we wouldn't be changing our passwords like that. And I mean, it could be coming from our own computers. There's no doubt. They know how to get into people's Yahoos and everything else. What I have had happen, obviously, I've told you guys, we've had people get into our account while we were just sitting here and they stole a car. I had someone on my brokerage part steal a car. Just like a month ago, a truck. I was telling you guys about that. They took it and stole all the pertinent good stuff out of the truck. And, what's a truck without a tranny and a motor? So, I mean, and it's happening all over the place. And as far as being a broker, I mean, I've ramped up everything I'm asking now. I'm even asking for pictures of the truck and trailer, and I'm sending it. If it's like a private individual or one of my personal customers, they're getting a picture of that truck and trailer with the name of the driver and their phone number. So just to make sure this isn't happening anymore, because it's happening. It's a lot. I mean, I'm just a little tiny person in a big, huge pond, and it happened to me. So can you imagine what's happening to the bigger brokers? They're just not talking about it.
Ooh, and I think that's where that would lead us to the fraud alert that we saw. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you hit a critical mass, you ring the alarm.
Yeah.
Wow. Right? So, you add up all those big brokers.
Yeah.
So then, what does that do to the insurance companies? Are they constantly getting these weird claims and stuff?
I don't know. I don't know how they're going through it. Because, everybody's supposed to have insurance on their vehicles being transported no matter what. And I don't know if, everybody knows that, but I always explain that to any customer. So it wouldn't be falling back on, a transporter's because it's going to go through probably their personal because it was stolen. You know what I mean? So I don't know how it would affect the guys' rates as far as transporters go. Don't you figure it? Eventually, all this filters down. Eventually, And if every other price is going up, one of the guys just went out of business a month ago. They increased his insurance from $4,000 to $6,000 a month, and he'd never had a claim. So I can't afford this. He's only a little 3-car.
So getting back to, what would you tell the guy with the spreadsheet, and what would you tell the people that don't have trucks but have deals? Are the rates a problem?
Yes, rates are obviously a problem. I mean, honestly,
I don't think they think the rates are a problem.
No, they don't.
I never see them say, we're raising our rates.
Yes.
We're helping you out.
Yeah.
No.
Big brokers, they know what kind of expenses these transporters have because most of those big brokers have their own transporters, right? They should get it more than everybody, and they're usually the ones that lower the prices the most, right? So, and we're not going to mention names, we know. Okay, and so you have that to factor into all of this, right? But, as far as when we're talking about rates, there's always a leader in there. You know, we use the, what do they call it? The, what's the thing on Central, Jay? The comparative button. Oh, everybody uses it.
Yeah.
It's not accurate. That doesn't help anything at all because it's usually really lower rates. I always, and they never have told us yet what that rate is from. Like if it's a 30-day period, is it a week period? You know, that kind of thing. So how do we really base that? Because right now it's snowbird season. If you look out of Florida going up north, the rates show lower rates right now. But I know.
Oh,
I know it's snowbird season.
Okay, we didn't talk about this.
Okay.
But I saw that, okay, you take the Port of Baltimore problem.
Mm-hmm.
You got loads diverting everywhere.
Right.
You've got local guys that need work.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, hey, Rod was just talking about backhaul problems.
Right, nothing. Yeah.
And guess what happens? Then, because there's now all these guys available, the rate drops even further.
Yeah, because there's going to be too many transporters.
And so now you've got ridiculously low rates.
Mm-hmm.
And all these other problems. I mean, it's almost like at this point I'm not supposed to continue talking because if I start picking on capitalism again, I'm really going to get canceled. And I'm not here to pick on capitalism. I believe in America, okay? Camera one. I love America. But there's a point where some of these free enterprise, I don't know. And this, I'm trying to bring this back home to, there are folks that are like, nope, the rates are high enough.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're...
They're not.
They're clearly not.
And I don't know if you'll ever bridge the gap to everybody in this whole ecosystem that we have of what the transporters have to pay out, you know, compared to what they think that their 50 cents a mile load they put on the board is going to cover. I don't think they get it. And in some instances, they probably don't care. I mean, I don't want to say it like that, but a dealership selling a car, he doesn't care. You know, he's just trying to get this car sold.
That is well said. That's right. You know? And you know what? Instead of focusing on that, we've got narratives like cars are people too and all this stuff. But, God, so crazy. All right. I know. And I don't even say don't haul cheap freight anymore because that is pointless to say.
Yeah.
It's pointless.
Yeah.
The freight will be listed cheap, and that's how it will be listed.
Yep.
And this idea that we can keep waiting for, like, bad actors and like, unverified carriers to get, like, weeded out.
Right.
I don't think that's true at all. I think that if you look at, like, the caravans of migration, there's always a country further to the south.
Yeah.
There I said it.
There's usually
so there will never be. There's an endless supply of cheap, unrated carriers that will do it for $50 less, $100 less, $200 less. Move it for free. It's never going to stop.
Yep.
So why do we talk about it? I don't know. It eats up time, I guess. All right, that's today's show. Thank you so much, Sue. Great job.
You didn't show the picture, Jay.
Which one?
The smart car.
Oh, yeah. Let's finish up with the smart car. This is pretty smart.
That's pretty funny.
Here we go. Yes.
So I was driving by
pretty smart. Okay.
And I'm like, my son's in the passenger. I'm like, take as many pictures as you can. This is ridiculous. So, hey,
well, you know what? It probably makes up for a backhaul.
That's what I figured it was, but I'm like, what, did they pick the thing up and put it on there, or what?
Or
it doesn't look like a Copart car. It looks like a new vehicle.
Well, you know what? It fits so well. I wonder if it's the owner's.
Well, that's crazy. It could be. Maybe right? Because maybe he does. Rams.
He might do. Well, I don't know. Anyways,
I don't know. The truck, we should have got a picture of the actual truck. It's probably one of the nicest trucks I've ever seen on the road. It was loaded. So that could be. I didn't even think about it.
And then he has buddies with a forklift and he throws it up there and...
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm here to deliver.
You know what? That's called winning business model. Charlie Sheen is in there winning.
Yep.
Awesome. Good call. Great way to end the show.
Yep.
All right, Janice. All right.
What do I say, office?
Goodbye, Sue.
Goodbye, Sue. Thanks so much. See you next Thursday.
All right.
Take care. Peace out. Thank you. Bye. And that's a cut. All right. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much for joining again, Industry Logistics on ATI Auto Business. My name is Jay. I am here every week, sometimes several times a week. In fact, I'll be here tomorrow live from NARS Repo Summit, North American Repo Summit in Orlando. So please do join us for that special live event coverage. We'll be back Tuesday. We'll be talking about consignment. And then I think next Thursday, we've got Charles Lemons on the show. He's a car hauler. He's also a YouTuber. So that's going to be great stuff. Thanks so much, everybody. Thanks for saying hello. Please leave a like, share, tell your friends. It's ATI Auto Business. Take care. See ya. Bye.